AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello and welcome to Why This Movie, a podcast about our favorite movies and why they mean so much to us. Thank you all of you who listened to season one. This is the beginning of season two, the premiere episode, and we're going to try something a little different. There's no guest today, it's just going to be me, and instead of a conversation, it's going to be more of an appreciation. We have interviews lined up, and I'm working on filling out the new season at the moment, but in the meantime, there's a movie that's been crowding my thoughts for weeks now. For context, I called up Jonathan. He's a good friend of mine and a good friend of the pod.
Ahoy, hoy.
Hey, can you hear me?
I sure can.
So a few weeks ago, you and I went to see The Naked Gun.
The Naked Gun remake.
Right.
Very good.
Yeah, it was excellent. Very funny. And then afterward, we were having kind of a heart-to-heart in the parking lot. Do you remember what movie you told me I should go home and watch and have a good cry about?
I sure did. And I think I used those exact words when I recommended you watch Bob Zemeckis' 2000 Academy Award-nominated hit Castaway, starring Tom Hanks.
I did watch it, by the way. And it hit me in a completely... It hit me in a completely different way. I've always loved it. This time it devastated me.
Yeah, but, I bet it did.
But then also...
reaffirming.
Well, it was. And it was very cathartic in a way that I think only movies can be. So why was it, out of all the movies you've seen, why was it that one that came to your mind for me?
That is a great question. I feel like I've always had I think you do as well, a particular ability to connect emotional resonance with particular stories, characters, plots. And when you told me what you were going through personally and the mood and the feelings and the emotions that you were processing, immediately to my mind came, oh, that sounds like Chuck Nolan's predicament on Castaway, because I am a bit weird in that way, that I am unable to relate to human emotions without perceiving it through the lens of a cinematic character. So I was not associating and connecting with my friend Chris Maloney. I was like, oh, that reminds me of a Tom Hanks movie. He was alone on that island for years and years, going through hell and wondering, why keep pushing on? Why push through this? And the thesis is because someday your fortunes will change and the tide will bring in something else. And then just like that, one day you have a way out. And I thought it's such a powerful message of hope and resilience and perseverance. And it's a good, I think, hopeful, even bittersweet kind of recognition of what you can do if you just tough it out and hold on. And for you in that moment, I was like, I think this is what Chris needs to hear. And I think this is something that might and probably will wreck him, like you said, devastate you a bit. But I think also it will give you enough of that, I don't know, drive and motivation to see in yourself, okay, I can do this too. And hopefully that's what you took from it.
The film begins and ends at a literal crossroads. The opening shot is a FedEx truck driving down a dirt road, making a turn at an intersection that features two rural routes heading out in four different directions. The FedEx truck will, a moment later, retrieve a package that will eventually make its way to the main character, a systems analyst for Federal Express, played by Tom Hanks. It will play a pivotal role in his survival after his plane goes down over the Pacific Ocean and he ends up on an uncharted island.
I'll be right back! Hey, is all this turbulence from Santa and those eight tiny reindeer?
Better buckle up, Chuck. It's gonna get bumpy.
The film was released in 2000, directed by Robert Zemeckis in his first reunion with Tom Hanks after their collaboration on Forrest Gump 6 years earlier. In Castaway, Chuck Noland is a guy who is so good at his job with Federal Express that he is constantly being summoned to different parts of the world to do what only he can do. When we first see him, he's in Russia, speaking through an interpreter to a team of employees in a warehouse. This is his last official duty before heading back to Memphis for the holidays.
It's like a fire. It can either destroy us or it can keep us warm. That's why every FedEx office has a clock. Because we live or we die by the clock. We never turn our back on it. And we never, ever allow ourselves the sin of losing track of time. Locally, it's 1:56. That means we've got 3 hours and 4 minutes before the end of today's package sort. That's how long we have. That's how much time we have before this pulsating, accursed, relentless taskmaster tries to put us out of business.
In his brief moments in between work expeditions, Chuck shares a home with Kelly, the kind and gentle love of his life, played by Helen Hunt. Their time together is precious because it can be cut short at any moment by the sound of his beeper. And a beeper, by the way, for our younger listeners, it was a device that a lot of grown-ups used before everyone had cell phones. Basically, it was a way of being informed that you were needed, either for an urgent call or for an urgent matter that couldn't wait. That's exactly what happens at their Christmas dinner. Surrounded by Kelly's extended family, Chuck feels the vibration of his pager and stops what he's doing to look down. Then he and Kelly share a look, one they have doubtlessly shared 100 times before. Duty calls. He has to go, and it might be for a while.
Okay, I'll cancel Saturday.
No, don't. If I'm not here, I'm not.
Just so long as you're here New Year's Eve.
I will be here New Year's Eve, I promise.
He and Kelly share a short gift exchange in their car at the airport. She gives him a watch with a photograph of herself inside, something her grandfather used when he worked on the railroad. And Chuck gives Kelly a little box that he tells her not to open until he gets back. Then he tells her goodbye, gets out of the car, and hops onto a private plane headed overseas. The plane goes down in the middle of a turbulent storm, killing the pilot and the crew. Chuck, with the aid of an emergency flotation device, survives and wakes up the following day on the shore of an uninhabited island.
Hello! Anybody?
Chuck Noland is as alone as a human being can be. He does try to escape the island on the inflatable raft from the plane to no avail. Without a sail to carry him out over the breakers, he'll be there for the rest of his life. The next hour or so of this movie is a testament to the acting ability and presence of Tom Hanks, because it's just him. He's cracking open coconuts for food, he's drinking rainwater, and learning how to catch fish. And against reason, somehow, just watching him do that, it's all entertaining. There's a significant moment that happens after he's accepted that he might be stranded for a while. A series of packages, all from the crash, wash up on shore. He opens them one by one. They include some old videotapes, some ice skates, and a volleyball. And there's one box, decorated with the colorful image of wings by whoever sent it, that he can't bring himself to open. It's like some sense of ethics or professionalism prevents him from completely giving up on his old life, a life in which opening something meant for someone else would be unthinkable. As he struggles to build a fire, he slices his hand open and begins bleeding. In frustration, he grabs the volleyball and throws it off in the distance. When he retrieves it, his bloody handprint sort of resembles a generic face shape on the surface of the ball. Chuck, without thinking, adds a little mouth and eyes, and then gives the ball a name, Wilson. From here on out, Wilson will hear his thoughts and his fears, and become like a security blanket or beloved stuffed animal for a child who's afraid and alone. In this scene, he chats with Wilson after successfully building a fire and cooking a crab over it for dinner.
You gotta love crab. The nick of time, too. Didn't take much more of those coconuts. Coconut milk's a natural laxative. Things that Gilligan never told us. Oh. Pretty well made fire, huh, Wilson? So, Wilson.
Then comes a transition cut that happens. It's one that, when I saw it in the movie theater when it first came out, elicited an audible gasp from the audience. In one moment, Chuck is in a cave with Wilson after using one of the ice skates to extract an abscess tooth. In the next moment, the words, 4 years later, appear on the screen. We see Chuck, but he has been completely transformed. He is rail thin, with long hair and a beard, and skin that's been browned after years of being out under the sun every day. Chuck is seen effortlessly spearing a fish from several yards away with a pointy stick, then eating it without any satisfaction. It's the sort of thing he must do every day without thinking at this point. And then, for the first time in years, something washes up on shore. It's a large portion of a discarded portable toilet. Chuck stands it up on the beach and examines it for a while before the wind picks up and blows the thing over. And then it hits him. The thing that has washed up on shore is a sail, or could be used as one. He gets to work cutting down trees and assembling a raft, something he's likely done once or twice before in failed attempts to leave the island. But without a sail, there had been no way to get over the surf.
This is it. It's all that's left. Checked over the whole island, and that is all that's left. So we're gonna be short. Short. Just have to make some more out of videotape. Yes. No, we have time. We do, we have time. Look, the wind's still blowing in from the west.
I know. Yeah, I know. I know where there's 30 feet of extra rope. But I'm not going back up there.
By going back up there, Chuck is referring to the highest point on a nearby rock formation. Here we see the rope, hanging from a tree with a big piece of wood attached to it. It's clear that Chuck had made and tested a noose at some point, and then decided against going through with it. Chuck makes the rope and attaches the sail and paints on the sail the same winged image from the package that he couldn't bring himself to open those years earlier. He even creates a little nest for Wilson on the raft, so he'll be along for the escape, and hopefully, eventual rescue. Before this final attempt to leave the island, Chuck etches a message into the side of a rock face. It says, "Chuck Noland was here, 1500 days, escaped to sea. Tell Kelly Freers, Memphis, Tennessee, I love her." Chuck and Wilson set out from the island, the surf crashing over them, waiting for the right moment to raise the sail.
Not yet! Not yet! Not yet! Stand by, Wilson! Hold on! Hold on, Wilson!
Chuck looks back and sees the island. It is at this point that the score, by Alan Silvestri, kicks in for the first time in the entire movie, as the island disappears, and Chuck's raft becomes just a small dot in the open sea. Chuck is eventually spotted and rescued by a big commercial vessel in the ocean, but before that, in a heartbreaking moment, Wilson falls off the raft while Chuck is sleeping. When Chuck wakes and sees his only companion drifting out to sea, he tries his hardest to bring him back, but fails.
Wilson! I'm sorry, Wilson! Wilson, I'm sorry! I'm sorry! Wilson!
I want to take a moment here to say how differently this scene hits now that I'm in my late 30s, as opposed to when I saw this movie 25 years ago. After this movie came out, my friend Lance from church told several of us that his mom cried when Chuck lost Wilson, and we all scoffed and thought how ridiculous she was. But now I'm just as ridiculous as Lance's mom, apparently. I've had many times in which I had nothing to serve as safety or comfort besides some small token that kept me afloat, just as absurd, if not more so, than being attached to a volleyball with a face painted on it. And in my experience, what often transpires is that these relationships, whether they're with objects or pets or human beings, usually remain for as long as we need them to, and then they go away when we can do it on our own. After the rescue, Chuck is welcomed and celebrated. On a plane headed toward an event to mark his return, He gets an update from a friend.
Well, here's the drill. Plane pulls in, we get off, and there's a little ceremony right there in the hangar. Fred Smith will say a few words. All you have to do is smile and say thank you. And then we'll take you over to see Kelly.
She's actually going to be there, huh?
Well, that's what we have arranged. I mean, if you're sure you want to do that.
Oh, yeah, then. Yes. I don't know what I'm going to say to her. What in the world am I going to say to her?
Chuck, Kelly had to let you go, you know? She thought you were dead. We buried you. We had a funeral and a coffin, a gravestone, the whole thing.
Inside the hangar, Chuck waits to see Kelly, the reason he kept himself alive on the island, for the first time in 4 years.
I'm sorry, I must be in the wrong place.
No, you're in the right place. You probably don't remember me. I actually did root canal on you about 5 years ago.
Jim Spalding referred you?
Oh, yeah.
I'm Kelly's husband. Jerry Lovett. Kelly wanted to be here. Look, this is very hard for everyone. I can't even imagine how hard it is for you.
So how's someone supposed to proceed when everything that kept them going is not there anymore? When every person that made their life worth living is gone? I think that's the question at the heart of the film, when I've had to ask myself more than once, and probably the reason Jonathan said I should watch this movie again. Castaway says something about resiliency, about something inside of us that can be accessed when everything outside of us has let us down, like a reserve supply of strength or hope that is there in case of emergency. And the title Castaway is two words, by the way, not one. A castaway, all one word, is someone who's been stranded in an isolated place, but to be cast away, two words like the title, is to be essentially discarded and thrown out. And this happens to the main character twice. First, literally as a survivor on the island, and then by his old life back home. And the person he loved more than anyone else.
I think what really resonated with me, and it always gets me choked up, is near the very, very end of the movie. I think it's actually the penultimate scene, when he's alone in a hotel room talking to his coworker Nick Cerchi, and Tom Hanks delivers this really powerful 3-minute monologue as Tom Hanks lays out basically the entire philosophy that he used to survive 4 years alone.
So that's what I did. I stayed alive. I kept breathing. And then one day that logic was proven all wrong because the tide came in, gave me a sail. And now here I am. Memphis, talking to you. I have ice in my glass. And I've lost her all over again. I'm so sad that I don't have Kelly. But I'm so grateful that she was with me on that island. And I know what I have to do now. Gotta keep breathing. Because tomorrow the sun will rise.
Who knows what the tide could bring?
So when Chuck Noland finds himself at a crossroads in the movie's last moments, busy driving around the country replacing the packages that kept him alive on the island, there really is no way of knowing which direction to take or what will happen once that direction is taken.
Where are you headed?
Well, I was just about to figure that out.
Well, that's 83 South. And this road here will hook you up with I-40 East. If you turn right, that'll take you to Amarillo, Flagstaff, California. And if you head back that direction, you'll find a whole lot of nothing all the way to Canada.
I got it.
All right, then. Good luck, cowboy.
Thank you.
But when Chuck looks directly at us in the very last shot of the film, there's something in his eyes that says he's going to be all right. Against logic, in spite of everything and everyone he's lost. And I take great comfort in that.
Thank you for listening to Why This Movie. If you have a movie that you love that you'd like to talk about, email me at christopherallenmaloney@gmail.com, and you may be featured on an upcoming show.
Please remember to rate and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. And hit the subscribe button so you always know when we have a new episode released.